This is Line Break, where we deconstruct poetry written by young writers and discuss the inspiration and intention behind their poems. Take a pause and enjoy the line breaks. Here's episode 17 with Queen of Dawn reading her poem, Waiting for Inspiration.
I'm Queen of Dawn, and this is Waiting for Inspiration. I sit down at my desk, on the floor, at a table. Open my laptop, my notebook, try to clear my mind. I tell myself, just write. But some days I feel like I've forgotten the only language I am fluent in, unable to narrate my own life story. My writing riddled with holes, my ideas stolen from an author I don't remember, stuck to the back of my mind like forgotten memories, tacked to a corkboard, all of this just recycled words. I trip over paragraphs, knees scraped on stanzas, tangled by my metaphors, landing in a pile of fractured words and graphite dust. I get distracted by water droplets on the window and snippets of yesterday, feeling that what I'm supposed to say is on the tip of my tongue, but I can't quite taste it. Some days I have nothing to say, and I walk away, waiting, hoping for a stroke of genius, an idea worth scrawling on the palm of my hand, because some days my words are calligraphy ink, curling artwork, smooth lines and even brushstrokes, but some days they come out clotted and cracking, and I wonder, what do I rely on when my own voice is inconsistent? And I wonder, if no one hears these words, what do I need to tell myself? These poems are supposed to be full of fire, but some days the most I can do is drift.
Hey, thank you so much. That was great. There are so many amazing images in here, and they really bring the sense of trying to find inspiration to write, but getting stuck by feeling like you're just saying things that have already been said. Like, there's nothing original coming from you. Like you say, my writing riddled with holes, my ideas stolen from an author I don't remember, stuck to the back of my mind like forgotten memories tacked to a corkboard. All of this just recycled words. Do you find that you do that often, like take words from books subconsciously or consciously?
I think I do that, and I also worry about doing that a lot, because I think in the past I used to write a lot more fiction rather than poetry, like short stories and stuff. And I would sometimes find I'd write something and then a little while later I would be reading something and I'm like, wait, this is the same plot. Mm-hmm. I'd forgotten about this. So I think a lot of the time I wonder about that question of, is anything original or is it all sort of just people saying the same things in different ways? So I was thinking about that when I was writing it, and I don't know about particular phrases. It's hard because most of what I would take from other authors would be subconscious, like you were saying. So it's hard to know what I'm doing and if it's original or not.
Yeah, I think that I definitely do that. And it's probably natural too to just take in things that you've been reading and then it sticks in your mind and then you forget that it's not yours. But yeah, I think that it's good in a way because you're getting inspiration and that's a good source to like inspire you to write and create. But at the same time, then you're sort of stealing what they've written in a way.
It's a sort of a hard balance that like you've got to, you're going to be influenced by other people. So how much of that is okay? And at what point are you just not being original anymore?
Exactly. That's a big thing. And I think it's like that for all artists, not just writers. Probably for like inventors and engineers too, like when they're building stuff.
Yeah, probably anyone who creates things.
Yeah, just like, is this mine or is it just something that I've been influenced by? Like you were saying, you do it subconsciously, right? So it's not like it's something bad that people are doing. It just sticks in your head. Where is the line between inspiration and copying?
Right, ooh. Yeah.
This is the same sort of thing.
And it's also interesting, like sometimes I'll be consciously like looking at something and okay, what do I like about this? What can I use? And that's trying to take inspiration, like, oh, I really like the way this character was developed or this part of the plot, or I like the way this poem was arranged, but is that inspiration or is that copying? I don't know. Like, what do you think?
It depends on, I guess, how much you take from them. Because if you take, like, obviously the whole plot, then that's just copying. But if you have the same sort of, like, general idea, but once you boil it down, it's different, then I feel like that's okay. That's, like, inspiration.
That sort of brings me to just writing essays for school and when you need citations. And is this what I'm writing or what someone else is saying?
Exactly. And, like, how teachers are like, oh, take this, but write it in your own words. And then when you write it in your own words, you realize that you've written it in a totally different way. I read this thing a while ago, actually. I don't know who said it, though. But someone said that there are no new ideas in writing, in the writing world. So nothing is new. Everything has already been written. And everything has already been imagined and created and stuff. And I don't think I agree, because yes, like, a lot of things have been created, so there's going to be like duplicates and stuff, but there are so many different stories and so many different ways of telling things.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think maybe like the core morals, there's so many different specifics you can come up with that I think there's always something new you can write. I think that will just always be true, which is actually really cool to think about.
Yeah, I agree. Like, the morals, like, love and death and forgiveness and stuff like that, that's already been written about, obviously, but, like, the way that you address it and the perspective that you take on it is going to change from person to person. So, in a way, I do think that things have already been created, but not everything has been created. There's still a bunch of space.
I think of that about that with myself too. I'll have just written something and I'm like, oh, now I don't know. I don't have anything to write. A little while later, I'll come up with something and I'm like, well, now what do I do? But it keeps going. I guess with any form of art, you can feel like that. Like, I'll have nothing to do next and then something comes up, so.
Yeah, I feel like that too with my writing, especially when I write about the same thing a few different times, then I feel like, well, is this all I'm ever going to write about? Am I ever going to write about something else? And if you think about that kind of thing too much, and it can, like, really stress you out, you know, like, am I creating anything new? But I think that goes hand in hand with reading new things and learning new things. So it's like, those two are so connected, like reading things and writing things.
They definitely are. I think the more I read, the easier it is for me to write and come up with new ideas.
Yeah. And so, back to your poem. There's such beautiful imagery with this part that's, I trip over paragraphs, knees scraped on stanzas, tangled by my metaphors, landing in a pile of fractured words and graphite dust. And it's kind of ironic how you're writing about not being able to write, but it's explained in such a lyrical way. And this is like super meta, but did you have to wait for inspiration to write this about writing for inspiration?
Oh, this was definitely a really hard poem for me to write. Mm-hmm. I was writing this for school, actually. I needed to write, well, the idea was to write a slam poem, or at least a spoken word poem. And I was trying to come up with topics and I couldn't come up with anything. And then eventually I was like, no, I can't figure out what to write. I'm going to write about that. Mm-hmm. But this poem was a huge mess on a document. That's usually how I work. I'll have a vague idea and I'll just start writing stuff. And then I'll rearrange it and delete most of it and add more later. This was a mess for a while. And I think that was one of the first pieces I wrote that I actually used in the final poem.
Do you ever, like, keep the previous forms of your poems, like, before you've changed them to see, like, how they've evolved?
I don't keep them, but I have gone into my document history and looked at where I was at the beginning. So I can access it, which is nice. But it could be interesting to have like a folder of like day one of this poem or hour one of this poem. Just like the complete chaos.
Yeah, I was telling someone about this, about when I was writing, or when I write, that the more chaotic the page looks, the better the poem. So like if I've written it with really nice handwriting and there's no scribbles and no like little added bits in the corners, then it's not a good poem. I haven't put a lot of thought into it. I haven't truly made up mine. So I think that I really do have to just make it a total mess for it to come together.
Chaos is a sign of creativity.
Exactly. Because I think that then I'm like truly immersed in it. And if I'm not just like letting it come out how it comes out, then I'm not making it genuine. That's the real thing, is that if it's messy, it's genuine.
I think that plays a little into, I usually write things on the computer rather than on paper because I find that I can go back and delete things more easily. On paper, I'm more worried about like, okay, I want to figure out exactly what I'm going to write before I put it down because I can't get rid of it as easily.
Yeah, I've written both like in notebooks and in a Word doc, but I think that I prefer paper because then it feels like it's more real to me. And obviously it's real with like a Word doc, but it sort of seems like there's a little disconnect to me. It's just to me. We're like, having technology is sort of like a barrier when you're writing.
Well, I feel that when I'm reading, I much prefer reading actual books to digital books. So I don't know why. It's kind of funny. Like, I always want to read paper books, but then I always write on the computer. It doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, I can't read ebooks because I feel like, one, it's straining your eyes. But two, there is a disconnect. It's the same thing where like you're not truly holding this thing in your hands and like feeling its weight and actually seeing stains that someone has left on it, or like the folds in the paper and stuff. Like, it's more real when you can hold it and physically look at it. Or it's just looking at a screen is like, yeah, that's great, and you have the same like overall effect of like reading this book, but you're taking it in such a like disconnected way. And it's more like formal, I think. When you're reading a paper book, you can bring it with you everywhere you go, and you can get it messy, and you can like drop it and do all these different things to it and really like leave your physical mark on it. Whereas like an ebook is going to be on your phone or computer. You're not going to want to mess that up. So it's not going to get like marked by you.
Right, yeah. It's definitely nice to have something to carry around, like, when you shouldn't have anything you're carrying around, but you want your book.
Yeah.
Like, it's in your backpack, and then bring it along with you somewhere you know you're not going to be able to read, but just in case. It is nice to have that.
Yeah, and I think in a way it's like a blanket to some people.
Definitely.
Yeah, or, like, you have a sense of comfort of having it with you, even if you're not going to read it, and you've already read it, like, 40 times. Just, like, knowing that it's with you is comforting. So that's my opinion on the whole ebook thing. And also, I think that it's just so futuristic to read books on a screen. It's so like 2045.
We're not there yet.
Paper books should stay as long as they can. Something I noticed about this poem is that it's split into stanzas, and each stanza could stand as its own poem, which is something that we've talked about before in the podcast, where a poem that's split into stanzas, like each section, I guess, could be its own mini poem. And did you feel that when you were writing it too?
I didn't. I hadn't actually thought of that until you just mentioned it. Wait, now I'm going to look at it. I don't think I even originally wrote it with stanzas. When I first started getting into poetry, I didn't really ever use stanzas much. I sort of just like had a big long piece that wasn't broken up. But that's an interesting point. And there's always the question of like, how do you format things? Where do you put the different stanzas in the line breaks.
Ah, line breaks. So, yeah, speaking of form, that's another thing I noticed is that you space some words out, like, away from the, I guess, main body of the poem. And what was your decision behind that? Because, actually, we've talked about this before. Spacing words or letters out has, like, a visual and metaphorical, like, meaning, I guess.
I guess I just sort of wanted those to stand out. There's two spots where I did it. The last two words in the bit, the most I could do is drift. I just thought it, I don't know, I was just having kind of some fun making it kind of look like it was drifting away. That was all that was. And then there's the other part, they come out clotted and cracking, and I just sort of wanted that to look messy, like it wasn't put together right. And I hadn't really done much with like the visuals of any poems I'd written before, and I was sort of just experimenting and seeing what would work, and those were the two parts I thought actually made sense to have be different versus any other part of it. So
yeah, I don't do a lot with like spacing words out, but I think that little things like that definitely make a difference, and some people might not catch on to them and like the intention behind it, but once they've like heard it, it's like, oh wow, that's really cool that you put such tiny little details into it. Have you seen these mini houses sets that you can get?
I don't think so.
They're really, really tiny. They're these intricate little houses, and they have a bunch of tiny like pots and pans and hand towels and all sorts of tiny little things. And it's sort of like that, where this poem, and it could be small or big, but within it, you're adding all these tiny little details that people could miss. But once they catch on to it, it's like, wow, that's so cool. That's how I see it. There is something that I've done in one of my poems that, and I explained it to one of my friends too, and he was like, oh, I didn't pick up on that. So I don't know if anyone else did, but it was something that I had done. It was called Dear Iris, and it was about a letter to my future self. And in the beginning of it, all the I's were lowercase. And it was inspired by E.E. Cummings, where like any time that he wrote the letter I, would be lowercase, because it was supposed to represent how he felt like he was insignificant, you know, like his sense of self was small. So I did that in the beginning, but the last two lines where he said that I would forgive my future self if I didn't like my past writing, the I's were uppercase. And that was supposed to signify that like there had been some growth and change. But anyway, it was very, very, a very slight change, but there's big meaning behind it.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's very subtle. I remember reading that poem, and I don't think I made that. But it's cool to know that, and like learning new things about someone's writing or artwork or whatever it is that they put details into, and looking back and being like, oh yeah, that's there.
Yeah, that's what I think is so cool too. And that's what's really manifested in the podcast, is that learning about these tiny little details that people put into their poems that you never would have picked up on otherwise. So that's the kind of thing that I think is really cool when you talk about it and when you like tell other people about stuff like that. Those are the kinds of things that I sometimes sneak into my poems. But this is leading to another thing that we're going to talk about, which is misprints and publication, where you have a poem that's published and a word or a phrase or something is written differently than how you had written it. Has that happened to you?
Oh yeah, like in newspapers where they'll publish it in a different, definitely. I mean, I haven't had very many pieces published, maybe like half a dozen, and some more than others, but I have seen that. And I guess part of me is like, oh, that's not how I wrote it. That was my writing. I'm not sure why it looks like that. And part of me is like, well, it doesn't really matter, because I've got sort of the essence of what I was saying. Mm-hmm.
But I think that sometimes it isn't a big deal if it's just like one minor change, but sometimes just changing a word can change the overall tone of the poem and like what people take away from it. Because and this isn't like a pointing fingers kind of thing. This is just an observation that I've had. One of my poems was published in the newspaper, and It was prayers to an unknown recipient, but it was changed to prayers to an unknown messenger, which it wasn't a big deal. It's just one word that was changed in the entire poem, but it changed the way that it was read and the way that you like understood it. So that's just a little thing that I've noticed and how like important words are really, because then like if one is changed to be like plural or a synonym or something like that, then it changes the intention that you had and what you wanted people to take away from it, right?
Right, and I think that's especially true for poetry because you have so few words to begin with.
Yeah.
Trying to say something in a small amount of space. So it does, and also it's a lot of it's about the way it sounds and the way the words fit together. So if you have things that have changed, it sort of offsets the rhythm. And it's interesting, like I've had that happen with things I've written and it's been changed, and it's sort of like halfway between reading my own work and reading somebody else's, because it sounds like what I was trying to say but said through somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I totally agree. And then sometimes when that happens, you feel like, well, is it still mine? If someone else has like turned it around, then is it still mine at that point? And this is a big thing that I've been thinking about. And I really want to make a whole separate podcast about this because I think it's super important. At what point is your poem not yours? Like, when is the creator separated from the creation? You know, like, is it not yours once other people have changed it? Or once other people have read it and gotten a different meaning than what you had intended? Or is it not yours when someone reads it without emphasis that you would put on certain words? Or is it not even yours when you share it with other people? Right? Like, at what point is it not yours? Or is it always yours?
Right. That's a really interesting question. I've definitely thought about that with books and sort of different universes, like when an author creates a universe and then there's a huge fan base and the fans take it and do what they want with it. Is that still their world?
Yeah, and fan fiction.
Right. I feel like it can still be the work of like the author's work and belong to other people as well. It's definitely hard if the words themselves get changed. I think just people having different interpretations doesn't change sort of the author's ownership of the work. It's just other people taking it for themselves. But if it's actually changed, like the actual words in the piece, I'm not sure what I think of that.
Yeah, I think that if you change it completely so that it isn't even recognizable, then it's not the author's work anymore. I don't know, I think that it's definitely something to talk about. But I've written a poem about that too. And that was a really meta thing, like writing about, is this still mine? And then wondering if it's still mine after I've written it. But those are the kind of things that I think about, very philosophical. So back to your poem. You said that some days my words are calligraphy ink, but some days they come out clotted and cracking. What was your inspiration for that? Because I think that it's so true, where sometimes what I write is really beautiful and like touching, and some days it's just like all over the place and messy.
Yeah, I definitely experience that. I'll have moments where I'm able to come up with something suddenly, and I'll feel like it's kind of like speaking a different language. Like suddenly I'm fluent in poetry and I can write in poetry. And then there's some days where I don't feel like I can come up with anything at all. And that happens, like I also like to draw. That happens with drawing. Some days I can draw something and it comes out really well. And other days I'll spend hours and I'll just have this big mess on the page. It doesn't look like anything. And with the calligraphy ink, I don't know. I just think calligraphy looks really cool. I have no experience with it whatsoever, so I'm not really sure where that came from.
I've done calligraphy before, and I have a lot of brush pens, which are, like, the long, pointy kind that you use to do, like, the upstrokes and downstrokes. And it's very interesting because it's something that you have to have a lot of, like, skill to do, where you have to, like, have a light hand when you go up and a, like, strong hand when you go down, and then quickly do that, like, pressure change. So it's something that's very, very, like, syncopated, I guess. But you have to, like, really know what you're doing to do it right, which is, I think, perfect for when you're writing and you, like, feel like you're really doing everything right. Whereas sometimes you feel like you're doing it wrong. And sometimes I feel like, oh my gosh, what has my writing become? Who have I become as a writer? I'm just really dramatic about it, but sometimes I'm not that dramatic and I can just write a poem and be happy with it. I only get dramatic about my writing if I let myself. Like if I overanalyze it and then I think like, oh my gosh, I haven't written anything original in months. I've been writing about the same thing. This is all so boring. No one's gonna like this. That sort of thing. Does that ever happen to you?
Yeah, I think I get that. I also get, like, if I'm starting a new project, I'm like, this is going to be the poem, or this is going to be, like, the best story idea I've come up with, or I know there's some drawing I need to make, and I'm going to figure out what it is. But it's like, no, I just need to make a poem, or a drawing, or come up with one story idea, and it's not going to be the best one out there, the best one I could have thought of, but that's okay. So I have to get myself to think like that, to actually believe that, and not just tell myself that and then ignore myself.
Yeah, I definitely get super excited about new ideas, and I get really like passionate about like, oh yes, this is so good. Such good metaphors, such good imagery, such good line breaks. Oh, another thing that you said that's kind of related is, I wonder, what do I rely on when my own voice is inconsistent? And I agree with this because I feel like I switch between styles and tones without really finding like a balance of what I want to say and how I want to say it. And have you found a balance that feels like your style?
That's hard to say. I mean, I don't really feel like I have a sense of like my style, especially since I joined Young Writers Project in January, and that's really when I started writing poetry. So I haven't had a lot of time to try different things when it comes to poetry. So I guess it just depends on my mood. Like I'll write one type of thing when I'm feeling one way and one type of thing when I'm feeling another. And I think it's hard to see your own style. I find that in art too. Like I can recognize someone else's voice or style, but it's hard to see that for yourself.
At least for me. Yeah, that just reminded me of something. There's this like, I don't know if it's a phenomenon or what it's called, but there's this thing where you don't recognize the smell of your own house. Like you just know that that's what it smells like. But when you go to someone else's house, you can immediately tell that like what it smells like, you know?
Yeah.
And that's sort of the same thing that you were saying, where like you can't always tell what your style is, but you can immediately tell what someone else's style is. And I definitely agree. And I think that in a way, I don't think I have any style. I think it's just like what makes sense to me and in my mind. And it's kind of hard to explain where like, it's just, that's how it makes sense to me. And that's how it is.
Right. Yeah.
So another thing that you said is, I wonder if no one hears these words, what do I need to tell myself? And what was the inspiration behind that?
I think the inspiration behind that, I've heard different people talk about whether they write for themselves, write for other people, and to hear their interpretations. And I think, honestly, a lot of my writing is just me processing what's going on in my life. So while it's great when other people read it and they say, oh, I can relate to this, this is what this meant for me, mostly I'm just trying to get to a point where I feel like my own thoughts are coherent. Mm-hmm. I think that's mostly what it does for me, and that sort of goes along with the, like, what's to do if my voice is inconsistent. I'm just trying to figure out what my opinion is and what I'm thinking, and that's sort of my way of doing it. I think that's where that comes from. Like, what do I need to tell myself? What do I need to know that I think if I'm not giving this to anybody else.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I wrote a poem about this moment that happened after my grandma's funeral when I was in the car with my brother. And a lot of people read it and said that, like, oh, wow, this really, like, I felt something when I read this, or this was really cool, and just stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, that's great. I'm so glad that you could, like, be touched by it and stuff. But at the same time, what has it done for me, you know? What am I going to tell myself about writing this, or about the fact that I've written it, about the fact that, like, I've actually put these words down and acknowledged it? That kind of thing. See, there are so many big metaphorical, philosophical things to talk about writing. We're just going to turn this into a philosophical podcast. That's that.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, sometimes I do write things for myself, and then it almost feels weird, like it's not a real poem if I don't share it. Do you feel like that too? Like, if no one else reads it, is it really a poem?
A little bit, I guess. I mean, to some degree, maybe more now that I share my writing more than I used to. That's an interesting question.
Definitely. So, oh yes, your ending. These poems are supposed to be full of fire, but some days the most I can do is drift. Inspiration behind that?
Well, I think there were sort of two reasons for that last part. The first was this was for school, so I was doing a project for my lit class on slam poetry and looking at sort of what makes a slam poem, and looking at how a lot of them are, you know, full of fire, passion. They're talking about big topics, and I felt like I just didn't have anything like that to say at the time, and that I was just sort of trying to come up with words, and I was just sort of drifting. But I think beyond writing, that's just sort of a general life thing. Like, sometimes I don't feel like I can be passionate about anything. Like, I don't have a big project I'm working on. I'm not going and doing big and important things. I'm just sort of here. And so I think that was also part of it.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. Where, like, on the slam poetry level, and also on the just, like, life in general level, where some days I feel like my poems are just not, I guess, serious enough in a way, whereas they're not, like, addressing big issues, and they're not, like, making a real change. But I don't think that they have to be like that. I don't think that there's, like, a requirement to make all poems, like, really serious and full of fire and passionate and stuff.
Or even any poems. Like, if you don't want to do that,
yeah,
there's no rules.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we've talked about this so many times, that if it's a poem to you, then it's a poem. I definitely think that, especially after I've read a lot of slam poetry or listened to it, then I feel like sort of inadequate or sort of childish in a way too. Like, I'm not writing about these big problems in society and about how, like, this is what we have to do to, like, change the way that we think of gender standards and, like, stuff like that. I don't write about that, but I don't think that I necessarily have to, like, be, I guess, a poet, you know? Like, in order to be defined as a poet, you don't have to write about serious topics. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, you can write about that, and I think it's great to share your opinions and write about what you believe and don't believe in, but, like, don't feel like you have to write about that kind of thing, and don't make other people feel like they have to write about that kind of thing. Right. That's important, too.
You can write about the small things. I've been having some fun also, just trying to get myself to appreciate words for the sake of words. Because I think when I guess I have this feeling, like, whatever I write needs to have some sort of underlying meaning or moral, but it's actually really fun to just write words that sound cool and come up with interesting images. And I'm trying to get myself to be more like, okay, that's fine. That's just another way to do it. It doesn't have to be about something big. It can just be, this was a cool metaphor I thought of and I want to use it.
That's awesome. That's really, really great. I'm trying to do that too. And separate the big meaning from like the, this is a cool poem I've written thing. So, what do you think is the overall meaning of this? And what should other people take away from it?
Overall meaning for this, I'd say it's sort of a good reminder to myself that I will always have a hard time creating things, but I can use that as inspiration and I will come up with something. And as for other people, I don't know, I guess take what you want. I mean, I wrote it mostly for myself, but if you find it relatable, you can interpret it how you will. It doesn't really matter too much that everyone sees it the same way.
I think that's great. So, now, how did you get into writing?
How did I get into writing? Well, I've always loved reading. I read far less than I used to, which is, I'm very disappointed in myself about that. I feel like I should be reading more books than I do, because I used to read so many. But I think because I've always loved reading, I've always been interested in writing. And, but for most of my life, it was fiction. It was short stories or longer stories. So poetry was a more recent interest. It sort of came up in the past year. I was like, oh, I could try that. That might be kind of fun.
That's great. And how did you discover Young Readers Project?
I think I first heard about it when I was in like fifth grade from my school librarian. I could be wrong. This was a while ago. And I think she had an account for like school or something, and she let me post something using her account, and then years went past and I sort of had it in the back of my mind, like, I know that exists, but I never made an account until this past winter. I don't remember what the inspiration was. I think it might have just been that I wanted to write more poetry and wanted to find a place where I could read poetry and share what I wrote, and so I made an account.
That's great. And you know what's so cool about the podcast is that everyone gets into writing in different ways, and it's so cool to learn. Like, you may have discovered Young Writers Project or discovered poetry completely different to how someone else did, or completely similar. And that's what's really cool, is like the parallels between how people get into writing. And what is your writing advice for someone who's waiting for inspiration?
I guess I would say, oh, that's hard.
I know, right?
After writing this poem, I should have something to say about that. But maybe you don't. I think what I would tell myself, and maybe this would be useful for other people, is you don't need to find the perfect thing to write about. Mm-hmm. You just need to find something to write about that you're excited enough to write about. Mm-hmm. So if you can't think of some big and important topic, write about the rain that's on your window. There is always something you can use. And if you just let yourself find it, and also if you wait until you're feeling like you can write, something will happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think that on like a technical level, then read something, or read something that you've written, read something someone else has written, read the back of a cereal box. But like on a more metaphorical level, something's always gonna inspire you. You know, you're always gonna find something cool in real life or in Harry Potter or in, I don't know, a coffee cup. Like, you're always going to get inspiration from some place and some source. So don't give up on writing just because you can't think of something to write about. That's important. And yeah, I think that inspiration is a funky thing, but it's always going to be there. It's kind of like spiders. They're weird and creepy, but they're always going to be there.
I really needed that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The spiders are always there, everyone. Remember that.
Yes, spiders. Oh, they creep me out so much. That's another thing. I was talking about my pet peeves on the last podcast, and I don't know if I mentioned spiders or not, but spiders, not just the big spiders, the tiny ones freak me out too, because they're tiny. Like, they can slip into my pillowcase so easily. They can just crawl across my keyboard. Oh, they're so creepy. But inspiration is not creepy.
It could be, depending on what you're writing about.
That's true. That's very true. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I've been talking to Queen of Dawn today about a bunch of super cool philosophical writing things and your awesome poem.
Thank you for having me.
This has been episode 17 of Line Break. I hope you enjoyed and stay tuned for episode 18. Bye!